meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it's approximately 1:34 p.m. On this Thursday afternoon, February 5th. We do have a quorum here. Beginning at my right, we have Senator Meyer, we have Senator Thomas, and to my left, Senator Bundy, and myself, Senator Pascvan. We anticipate that Senator Davis will be joining us soon. I would request that everyone please turn off their cell phones, Blackberries, all that stuff. We've been told that it does interfere with the electronic recording, and so rather than just putting them on mute, if one everyone could please turn them off, and let the record reflect that we have Senator Davis is now joining us. And so anyway, the purpose of today's meeting, I hope to have testimony on two bills today, on the committee substitute for Senate Bill 83, which relates to Vocational Rehabilitation Committee, and Senate Bill 1 relating to Alaska's minimum wage. I want to thank everyone for joining us at this time, and you know, what I do hope to pass out of the committee today is the Senate Bill 83 committee substitute, and after that then we will begin the hearing on Senate Bill 1, which does regard the Alaska minimum wage, and I intend to hear from the bill sponsor on that and intend to begin taking testimony on Senate Bill 1, but do not intend to pass the bill out of the committee today, so anticipating that we'll have some testimony from around the state both today and then the later day that we continue with the hearings on that. So we begin with Senate Bill 83, and we have officially before us, I believe, committee substitute for Senate Bill 83, and this is work draft 26-GS-1024R. And Mr. Thomas, do you, or Senator Thomas, do you have a
yes,
a motion with respect to that?
I do. Mr. Chairman, I move we adopt the CS for SB 83 26-GS-1024-R, and I object for the purposes of discussion.
And at this time, I would request that the bill sponsor please approach the committee and, or both of them.
For the record, my name is Paula Scavero. I'm the legislative liaison for the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And with me is Cheryl Walsh, the Director of Vocational Rehabilitation at the department. Senate Bill 83 is a bill to come compliant with federal law changes on our State Vocational Rehabilitation Committee. We haven't added anything more or less than what was required by federal law. Section 1 changes the name of the committee. Section 2 is how many members and the composition of the committee. And actually, what we did, instead of putting the number, which is constantly changing in federal law, we put the code, federal code, federal law, so when every couple years the federal government changes the number of members or the composition, we can actually do it without coming to you again for another statute change. Number 3 is the selection of the chair of the committee and how that is done. Section 4 says how many times the committee shall meet and that the meetings can be conducted telephonically. Section 5 is a transition phase of the members of their terms. Section 6 is a revisor's note saying throughout statute, wherever it says this committee, change it to the State Vocational Rehabilitation Committee.
I think just for purposes of making sure that we have the record correct, if you could identify the changes from the initial Senate Bill 83 to the committee substitute so that we don't get ahead of ourselves here.
This is probably the smallest committee substitute change I've ever seen. In fact, the 25 years, I got my 25-year pin today. In section Section 2, Line 4, we changed 29 U.S.C. Code 3001 to 3003. It was a typo. So it's the only time I've ever seen an actual one-number committee substitute, but it had to be done.
Does anyone on the committee have any further need to address the committee substitute for the Senate Bill 83?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bundy?
Yeah, thank you. A question on Section 4. Meetings may be conducted telephonically. Does that mean that the participants are able to vote also telephonically?
I'm going to refer to the director.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe the legislature can be enlightened enough to follow that someday.
And Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paula, we currently get 70% of the funding from this committee from the feds. Is that correct?
I'm going to refer you to the director.
Okay.
Through the chair, yes, that's correct.
Okay. Is that subject to change in the future? I mean, could the feds say they're only going to provide 50% or 40%?
Through the chair, this is there's a formula that's the federal formula, and that's. Actually, I can get back with you for that information if you'd like. We have matching requirements through our federal grant.
Sure. And right now it's 70-30, if I may, Mr. Chairman. They pay 70, we pay 30.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. But in the future, we don't know. That could change to 50-50. That could change to whatever. Is that correct? Or has it been 70-30 for a long time?
Through the chair, yes, it has. It's remained at 70-30.
Okay, very good. If I may continue?
Yes, Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Now, you said that the committee membership, committee numbers have changed frequently, and that's one of the reasons why you want to make this change, so you don't have to come back to us each time. Am I correct with that?
Through the chair, that's correct. The membership has... represents different populations of individuals and people from Department of Education, people from labor, business individuals, and it's the representation of the people that we serve as well through our program. So the composition could change when the Rehabilitation Act is reauthorized, and we wanted to avoid having to make changes each time if we can just cite the federal regulation.
Okay, that's good, and I appreciate that, if I may, Mr. Chairman. But then we may be putting the state, it may end up costing the state more money in the future if the numbers on the committee increase in the future. Is that a possibility?
I think rather than that, we probably would have more of the telephonic meetings, or there's other ways of doing cost saving. Another way is some people can serve. We have to have a representation of people with disabilities, and we try to find perhaps business people who also represent someone with a disability so that we can dual feel in that case.
Okay, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to toss out this as an idea or a possibility that maybe we would want to do a sunset on this bill of 5 years so that we could see if the matching money from the feds do change. So that we can see if the committee membership is going to increase and end up costing the state more money. Would you be amenable to something like that?
Through the chair, the difficulty with that is that this committee is required for us to receive our federal funding to run the vocational rehabilitation program itself. It's not just for the committee. It's the oversight committee for our program. And so I think if you put a sunset in there, it could impede our ability to accept the federal dollars to serve the individuals that we serve.
Okay, I mean, but we do sunsets, and just because you have a sunset doesn't mean you're going to stop the committee. It just means you want to take another review to make sure it's working the way that we anticipate or think it's mm-hmm. going to work today. I guess I'm not, it doesn't matter that much to me, but I think as a safeguard, that's something we might want to consider.
First, for purposes of the record, would you please identify, I don't know that you have identified yourself, and we know that Paula has, but if you could please.
For the record, my name is Cheryl Walsh, and I'm the director of the Alaska Division of Vocational Rehabilitation.
All right, thank you very much. And for purposes of the objection that Senator Thomas raised, is there any information that Senator Thomas would like to?
No, I just wanted an explanation, and with that explanation, I remove my objection.
Are there any other objections to accepting the committee substitute? Without further objection, then, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 8326 GS1024R has been adopted, and now I believe it would be time, is there, to receive formal, now we have formally the committee substitute before us, is there any other testimony that the bill sponsors would like to make, or are there any additional questions that anyone on the committee would have? Is there any off-site testimony that we might be interested in hearing any comments or questions about?
No.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Thomas.
I move that we pass the CS for SB 83 work draft number 26-GS1024/R from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
No objection. It has passed through. I guess I'd call for a brief at ease so that we can have a signing. And our congratulations to Paula on our 25-year pin today. So a brief at ease. Addressing Senate Bill number one, and I'd like to comment at the very beginning. We know that the outcome of this bill, one way or another, will affect many tens of thousands of Alaskans who earn at or near the current minimum wage, and it will also affect one way or another many business owners who employ those tens of thousands of people. And it is my intent, and I believe the committee's intent as well, to today and when we take up the bill again, to listen to the people from around the state so that we can understand their concerns and motivations in this issue. I understand that there's over 20 people online or off-site that are prepared to provide testimony today, and we have a number of people here as well. If you do not have the opportunity to formally appear before this committee by providing testimony in this manner, please understand that you may, by email or a letter to me or a committee member, we will make sure that that is distributed to all the committee members, and it will become part of our permanent record. I believe today we received approximately 70 written testimony information, and so that will become part of the official record of this committee hearing on Senate Bill number one. The reason why I indicate the numbers of people is that in consideration of everyone, both those online and present, if everyone could limit their testimony to 3 minutes, and we will try to accommodate everyone. To begin with, if I could invite Senator Wilikowski, the bill sponsor, so that we can begin with the bill sponsor and his thoughts on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Wilikowski. I'm State Senator for Northeast Anchorage. Appreciate the opportunity to present this bill to this committee. And I guess I should start by, I'll try to keep it brief. We had hoped to get two or three people to testify, and obviously have no control over the numbers that show up.
Yes. And Mr. Senator Wilikowski, you're not limited to the 3 minutes. So, you know, I want to hear your explanation of the bill, and I believe the committee does as well, so that we can begin with the most complete understanding as possible.
With all due respect, I was hoping you would limit me to 3 minutes. But, okay, well, just real brief history on minimum wage in Alaska. For those of you who may have forgotten, I know some of you have been here during the past go-around on minimum wage. Back in 2002, about 47,000 Alaskans signed petitions to increase the minimum wage. Alaska has historically always been at least 50 cents higher than the federal average. The signatures were presented to the lieutenant governor, the initiative was certified, and was placed on the ballot. And back in 2003, it would have, had it passed, increased the minimum wage to $7.15, which it currently is. But it also had a provision in there that it would have increased, that the federal, Alaska's minimum wage would have always been at least 50 cents above the minimum wage, and it would have had a provision in there for a cost of living allowance. The legislature did some polling on it and found that 80% of Alaskans supported increase in the minimum wage, which at $7.15 an hour in 2003 was the highest in the nation. And people say, well, why should Alaska be the highest in the nation? Obviously, we have among the highest cost of living in the United States. So it only stands to reason that we should have among the highest, if not the highest in the nation, on the minimum wage. Why is that important? Well, the legislature then, seeing that 80% of the public supported this, passed the bill, the exact same bill. Unfortunately, they came back the next year and stripped out the cost of living increase. Had that cost of living increase remained in effect, which the voters assuredly would have passed, then the minimum wage today would be, according to the ledger research analysis that we had done, in 2010, when this bill takes effect, the minimum wage, had that cost of living allowance remained in effect, would be $8.78. We didn't just pick the $8.75 out of nowhere. It would be, had the will of the Alaskan people, what they wanted in 2003 remained in effect, it would be $8.78 next year. And so that's the starting point for this piece of legislation. That's where we came up with the number that we came up with. Now, you talked about tens of thousands of Alaskans who will be affected. You're right. The numbers that we estimate are about 22,254 Alaskans who will be impacted by this. Now, there have been some studies done on the impacts of minimum wage. And I know one of the arguments that you always hear is, well, it's going to impact small business. And I don't think any one of us wants to damage small business. Nobody wants to hurt small business. But the reality is, and I'll pass this around with your approval, Mr. Chair, that according to 650 economists, including 5 Nobel Prize winners and 6 past presidents of the American Economic Association, they signed a letter saying back in 2006 that federal and state minimum wage increases, quote, can significantly improve the lives of low-income workers and their families without the adverse effects that critics have claimed. The critics have always claimed this is going to stop small business. This is going to injure small business. And study after study after study, and I'm happy to get this for you, Mr. Chair, if you'd like, show that it is simply not the case. And that is why 650 economists signed that letter urging the federal government to pass the minimum wage increases, including 5 Nobel Prize winners. Now, as many of you know, the federal minimum wage will be increasing, and it has been increasing. It was tiered to increase in 3 different steps. The third step goes into effect this July. So the federal minimum wage is actually, for the first time in Alaskan history, to my knowledge, is actually going to be higher than the state of Alaska minimum wage. Alaska, which once had the highest minimum wage in the United States, in July will now have the 40th lowest minimum wage in the United States. And I think it's clearly time that we address this issue. I think the Alaskan public, I know I surveyed my constituents on this issue, and just in a constituent survey, and I have a pretty diverse district, and 80% of my constituents said they supported increasing the minimum wage. It's, I think, universally something that people want. I think many small businesses recognize that it will not have the damaging impacts that people project, because the more money that people have to spend, particularly small particularly the lower income people, they spend it in the economy. These are not people who are hoarding this money. And I just need to point out, I had my staff put something together, which I'll pass out as well. This is, and I know one of the other arguments you typically hear is, well, this is minimum wage typically applies or only applies to kids who are earning, working at McDonald's or fast food restaurants. And again, the research does not support that. According to the briefing paper that I handed out in front of you, 46% of all families with affected workers rely solely on the earnings from those workers. And about 25% of people who earn the minimum wage have families. Now, if you look at this sheet that I just handed out to you, it shows, talks about what, you know, we tried to be as conservative as possible and try to estimate what is the absolute minimum that you can live on in Alaska. And you'll look at some of these costs. For instance, the heating costs, Mr. Chair, we're saying that the annual cost for heating, $924. And I know up in Fairbanks where you live, you're probably paying that per month. But we wanted to keep this as absolutely low as possible. The federal minimum wage, or the state minimum wage as it stands right now, earns someone about $14,000 per year. You can't live on $14,000 a year. Now, we're not saying that by increasing it to 875, that's the panacea. That's going to solve all the problem. But what we are saying is, let's, as a state, adopt a policy and try to give these people a little bit of help in getting by. Costs of fuel have risen. Costs of food have risen. Everything in our economy has increased dramatically since 2003 when we last increased the minimum wage. I think it's time to increase this again, and I'll stop right there and happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do any of the committee members, yes, Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you, and I appreciate the handout. My back of the envelope scratching says that if you achieve this increase, it'd be a yearly income of about almost $17,000 a year, before taxes, of course. I understand you're trying to make as small as increase as possible, but it still doesn't seem like a living wage. Why, as long as you're going to make a change, why don't you make a more substantial change?
Senator Bundy, through the chair, if you were interested in proposing an amendment to increase the amount, I would suggest that the committee consider it at that time.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I took the liberty before this meeting of looking back at just what was available for room rentals in the Juneau area for the legislature. And I found it interesting because I didn't really consider it very, very seriously because I already had a place. And I find that the numbers not only comport with yours, but actually they comport with yours almost for a room with either a shared bath or in some cases a semi-shared bath. And I'm not really sure what that amounts to, but most of the numbers are $600 to $1,000, you know, somewhat being an average, rough average of $750. And when you got into, and this was from the valley in the area here in Juneau, and when you got into the valley, condos and apartments, one bedroom, basically averaged in excess of 1,000, and condos, two bedrooms, were anywhere from 1,500 to 2,500. So I appreciate your other information. And I also, something in just the course of, sounds like I'm very supportive of your bill, but anyhow, somewhat in the course of other information in other committees, the Mental Health Trust, I believe it was, came up with a figure that 85% of your minimum wage is consumed simply in the housing aspect of things. So I made up last year a chart, which I believe you've probably seen, and by the time you get done, it's actually total expenses, and these are minimum expenses, is close to a couple thousand dollars a month, and after taxes, the current rate you're afforded actually about $1,000 or $1,100 a month. So I appreciate your comments, and don't really have any questions. Just wanted to make more of a statement, I guess, of my support of this bill.
Any other questions of Senator Wilikowski at this time from the committee? Yes, Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. A question perhaps for you, Mr. Chairman, but perhaps Senator Wilikowski can help. We got these letters, quite a number of letters of support, and it says very pointedly here, this letter campaign was organized by local citizens and not affiliated with politicians, political organizations. I know when we distribute things here, we're it's important we put our name on them, and we have individuals' names, but it'd be important to me to know who organized this campaign, because the forms are all the same. I'd like to know, you know, who's recruiting people to send us the
I don't know the answer to that, but possibly that information can be found out. Again, all of the information that is emailed in or mailed in will become part of the official record. So I want everyone that's listening to this, you know, off-site, to understand that it will become part of the permanent record of this committee. Are there any other questions of Senator? Yes, Senator Thomas.
I forgot the question that I did have. Do you have any demographics on the 22,000 impacted folks as far as the general things? Ace, they're probably excited, I'm sure. But age and race and where they may be living in the state?
Senator Thomas, through the chair, my name is Michelle Seidem, and I'm an aide to Senator Wilikowski. And I believe in your packet is a page prepared by the Department of Labor that breaks down the 22,000 not by demographics such as age or sex, but by industry in which those individuals work.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes, I recall seeing that sheet as well. Commenting upon Senator Wilikowski's comment about my heat bill, I did speak with my wife last night, and she got her heat bill, and it was over $800 for the one heat bill for about the month of January. So I hear you on that one. So at this time, I believe it would be appropriate to open the to thank Senator Wilikowski and to open the committee to public testimony on Senate Bill 1. Are there I believe that we have some people from the administration. Gray Mitchell, Director of the Labor and Standards and Safety, and next I guess we'd have Brian Ray, Research and Analysis from the Department of Labor. Are they present?
Yes.
Okay. Could we please ask for you to approach and would you please provide your name and affiliation?
I'm Gray Mitchell. I'm the director of the Labor Standards and Safety Division for Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I'm here today primarily to answer questions. I don't have any prepared testimony, and I don't believe Mr. Ray does either.
For purpose of the record, if we could at least get...
For the record, I'm Brian Ray. I'm an economist with the Research and Analysis section of the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and I manage the Occupational Information Unit.
If I just make a comment before we open it up to questions, has the administration taken a position with respect to this bill? You nodded your head.
The department is neutral at this point, so okay. That's where we're at.
Is there a reason one way or another on the neutrality, or what's...
I don't have any reasons to explain. I'm sorry.
Okay. Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Facts seem to vary some with who's doing the telling, and we just got a report, some 600 and some economists. I'm reminded, I think, of one of our presidents said if he had 100,000 economists laid end to end, they still wouldn't reach a conclusion. I've heard this information saying it won't have a negative impact on business, and I'd be interested in your experience as an economist and what you think raising a minimum wage, both positive and negative impacts.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy. There have been many studies that have found there both to be no impact. There have been many studies that have found there to be a negative impact on employment. There have been studies that have shown there have been a shift in the demographics of those people who are later employed. after the imposition of a minimum wage. I believe that it is difficult for anyone to reach a reasonable conclusion based on a review of that those studies. So we try our best to look at facts, look at history, try to see what we've seen in other situations. We did have one increase, obviously. Thank you. We did have one increase in the minimum wage back in 2003. We did review that. We saw certain types of movements in the labor force that was being employed, but we did not necessarily see a decrease in employment.
Mr. Chairman, if I in yes. The movements, and you mentioned the demographic change, do you have that information on the top of your head or something you could share with us?
If I can refer to my notes through the chair. Senator Bundy, we worked together with the Labor Standards and Safety Division, reviewed one of the things that we could measure were youth work permits. And we did notice that there was a slight decline. It was a decline of about 20% in applications for youth work permits the year following the implementation of the minimum wage. And so we would have to surmise from that that there was less interest in the employment of youth in the labor force at that point. An aside to that is my understanding is that young workers who work less than 40 hours a week or 30 hours a week, thank you, sir, do not have to be paid the state minimum wage.
And just for my education, the application for youth work permits would come from employers and not from the young people themselves.
Senator Bundy, through the chair, that's correct. The employer is required by Alaska law to get a work permit in order to employ a worker who's under the age of 17.
Okay. Thank you.
If I could follow up on that line of questioning, is since, if I understand what you said, in the year 2004, there was that reduction, and I was just wondering if there was an analysis of those youth work permits in the subsequent years to determine whether there was a catch-up, so to speak, in that, or whether
I do not have the numbers in front of me. I do remember when we were doing the analysis that it seemed to be a stair-step movement downwards for that 1 year, and
I'm
then
sorry.
A stair-step movement downwards for that 1 year, and then we did see permits come back up to their previous levels.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you refresh my memory? I think, isn't there a provision that if an employer can hire somebody for purposes of training them, that they can not have to pay the minimum wage? Am I correct with that?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, there is a provision, but that's a federal provision. There's not an equivalent provision under state law at this point. They call that the training wage or the opportunity wage for the first 90 days, but the state has not adopted that.
Okay. Okay. And then I was going to ask too. I don't know who this handout came from. It's estimated Alaska 2007 employment by industry. And the only question I have here is that. It looks like when you look at who's paying below $7.75, it says manufacturing, it makes up 6.6%. And I was just wondering if you would have an example of manufacturing that pays below $7.75.
Yes, to the chair. Senator Meyer, most of the manufacturing that was in the lower pay ranges were in the seafood processing industry. That's one of the largest industries within our manufacturing group.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Any additional questions of these two witnesses by the committee? Of Senator Bundy.
Thanks again. And I apologize if I were picking on your profession. I just recall that comment. And as an economist, I've always assumed that whatever the minimum wage increases to $8.75 or $25 an hour, those costs are not borne necessarily by business and industry, but simply passed on through to the public. I assume that would be correct if this bill passed so that the basically people that are receiving the minimum wage would be help pay for their minimum wage.
Through the chair, is that a question, Senator?
Well, yeah. Don't you agree? It is an economic principle they're passed on, is it not?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, yes, it is. To the degree that we do not see differences in how the wages are applied among states, how the wages are applied across industries, where there would be what economists call a substitution effect, where I might spend more on one product than another, then it could potentially have an impact on businesses, on the sales of goods and services that had more of a increase because of the increased minimum wage. So we would, if we look down through the industry breakouts we had, we were asking about manufacturing, to the degree that it might make a product more expensive and someone substitutes chicken for seafood, there could be an impact on the seafood industry. We doubt that the cost of production and wages is such in that industry that we would actually see much of an impact there.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, may I follow up on Senator
Meyer.
Yeah, Senator Bundy brings up a good point, I think, in the sense that what we're attempting to do here is to help the buying power of the lower level working person. But in reality, are we truly helping their buying power if these costs are just simply passed on? I mean, yeah, they make it more in their hourly rate, but if the cost of that burger or whatever they're buying goes up proportionally, have they actually increased their buying power?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer. To the degree that everyone were to see their wages go up, we would probably expect then that we would see a commensurate increase in overall prices for all goods and services. To the degree that the minimum wage is being applied to a percentage of the workforce, and because the labor component is not the totality of the cost of goods and services, then we would not expect the prices to go up as much as the incomes went up for those people who would feel the effect of an increase in the minimum wage. So they would have more buying power at the end of the day. Prices of goods and services may go up incrementally, and that would affect everybody who is consuming those goods.
I can follow up?
Yes.
That makes perfectly good sense, but aren't most of the things that are manufactured, isn't your largest expense typically labor?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, generally not.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yes, as we see prices of metal go up and watch, you know, the price of a car go up, that necessarily isn't linked to an increase in the cost of labor for producing that vehicle.
Okay.
Senator Bundy.
Thank you for your patience. But every time I hear an answer, I feel a question coming on. And you'd mentioned if all wages went up. One of the things that I've heard, as was indicated by Senator Wilikowski, we've discussed these issues before, and one of the concerns or premises that have been brought forward is that the minimum wage is a delta, and whoever's making more than the minimum wage can then say, well, that went up, so now I need to go up, and then the next tier says they went up, so I need to go, and on and on and on. So as an economist, do you have any information as to whether that conventional wisdom is correct, that once you raise the delta of the minimum wage, other wages are likely to increase?
Okay. Through the chair to Senator Bundy. I called a non-scientific random sample of employers a couple of years ago when we were also addressing this issue, spoke with them and asked them all that specific question. They all agreed that most of the workers that they had who were making something above the current minimum wage, they would feel compelled to give those workers something above the newly imposed minimum wage. Those workers who were making at or slightly above the newly imposed minimum wage, they would feel compelled to give those workers some increase in their salaries as well. But that would quickly diminish, particularly as they moved outside of functional areas in the company. If you had someone, for example, who was working in, or employees who were working in a bakery, and they were all baking, and you had several of those employees who were working in some range between the old minimum wage and the new minimum wage, Possibly all of the bakers might get a pay raise because of the imposition of the new minimum wage, but the management of the company would not get a pay raise. The distributors might not get a pay raise if they were already above the minimum wage. So the effect is to have incrementally smaller increases in the wages of those people who are at or just slightly above the minimum wage.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I imagine from your earlier comments that we can assume that depending on who's paying for the study, that's how the result of the study comes out almost. If it's that split up, you know, if it's the AFL-CIO paying for a study, that probably that comes up saying that it doesn't have a negative impact and it's good for the economy because it spurs more consumer spending, which is one of the primary concepts or aspects of our economy. That's part of the problem we're suffering now. And if the National Association of Manufacturers or the NFIB gets a study done, that they probably end up with the opposite consideration. Is that fair to assume? Is that how you see them break out, or do you care to even comment on that?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, if I left you with that impression, I did not intend to say that the studies were biased.
Okay.
I think that we can find some very good studies that were not entered into with the attempt to find a resolution one way or the other, and that has just been inconclusive, or you could find one that was equally as valid coming with a different conclusion. So I would not necessarily believe that all of these studies were biased and inconclusive.
Is that due for me?
Yes.
Due mainly because too many other intervening factors in the economy to particularly in the case of a minimum wage increase, which is generally a small amount of money for a relatively small amount of people, having any great impact one way or the other than if you got it squeezed down to a very narrow segment or demographic or something like that.
Yes, through the chair, exactly, sir. Comparing the economy in 2002, 2003, and 2004, there were so many factors at play that identifying that, yes, we did see a decrease in youth work permit applications may have had other factors associated with it. So we as economists, we try to find something that is statistically significant to hang our hats on.
And if I may, since you mentioned the youth, I would put forth that probably in the Fairbanks area, I don't know if it goes for other parts of the state, but the J-1 visa is granted for a variety of people from foreign nations, generally as cultural exchange folks moving into jobs and being kind of brokered from one part of the country to another, and traveling with the various tour outfits is something that I think impacts at least the interior's economy as far as jobs for younger kids, seniors in high school and college kids, which I continually am told that the school year does not match up with the tourism season, but it's within days of graduations and returns to school that the two meet. So anyhow, thank you for your comments.
Seeing no further questions, thank you very much. We appreciate your answers. And we'll now move into, we have one person locally, Neil McKinnon from Alaska Laundry and FIB. And so, Mr. McKinnon, if you please state your name and your affiliation. And then after Mr. McKinnon, we'll move to the off-site LIO offices.
My name is Neil
Please understand for yourself and all of those off-site to please attempt to limit your testimony to the 3 minutes.
My name is Neil McKinnon. I'm the president of Alaska Laundry and Cleaners and a member of NFIB, and I'm here to kind of state my case and bring up my view on this thing. And first, a couple of comments. I have five employees that are at minimum wage. These five employees are prisoners inside Lemon Creek Prison that do the laundry for the Bartlett Hospital. We're at $5. The prisoners on the other side of the wall working, doing the ferry laundry, are working at around $1 an hour. And we're at $7. It's that rate we've set up when the program was set up. We're living with it. It's working. it set up a dislocation because here's a man working on this side of the wall earning $7.15. Here's a man working on the other side of the wall earning $1, doing the same kind of work. The prison industries have solved this problem by whacking their pay, the paycheck of my employees for cost of incarceration, guards, on and on, until they got their pay down to where it was an acceptable level of difference between the dollar and the $7. So these guys were maybe taking home $2 an hour, which didn't breed massive problems inside the prison over inequities. Now, outside the prison, I have other employees. No other of my employees are at minimum wage other than I've got some in the 850 category. These people are kids in high school or barely in high school that are just in their first job entering into this system of work. I take a chance on them. It's like, well, can you even show up for work? Here's this, but in the real world, I've got to be above 715 just to get a pool of anything that's you can even want to take a chance on. Coincidentally, about a month ago, I was looking at some of my costs. These kids, they'll hand out the clothes at the laundromat and make change in the laundromat. They basically sit there, surf the web, read a book, and make change or handle start a machine if somebody's got a problem. I was looking at cutting this cost because, you know, what's a self-service laundromat if I got a guy doing person doing the service work? And frankly, if this bill goes in, this is going to be the camel that's going to break their back, my back, and I'm going to go to just straight self-service. If you don't have the change, you have a problem, write a slip, we'll deal with it in the morning. And, you know, it's where you got to look at all costs. Now, it's not going to put me out of business, but it's going to put these kids and these people out of jobs. Some of them aren't kids, but they all have, several of them have state jobs. They're working for the state of Alaska right now, but they come in there because they can earn $8.50 an hour, sit there, read a book, wash their clothes, and collect $30 in an evening when, you know, rather than sit home and watch TV. So it's not like they're living on this job. This gives them extra money. It helps them out, and it gives them something to do. That's going to go away because, you know, you get to that point, it's, you know, well, is this worth it? Is it not? And frankly, before this came in, I was looking at, is it worth it? Is it not? How do we weigh customer service against expense? And, you know, and I think that's what you're going to do by raising this minimum wage. The training wage was talked about. That's really what it is. I mean, I've had numerous jobs as a kid at minimum wage and probably even below. That never stopped me because I wanted to work and I wanted the job. And, you know, somebody says, I'm going to give you a chance and we'll see what you do. And you know what? I started a lot of jobs at minimum wage, but I never stayed there long. And, you know, and I look at that. I see somebody come in off the street. Well, we'll give you a chance and let's just see if you can show up to work on time, show up to work, not screwed up, and not steal from me. You know? And if you find something like that, well, you got a jewel, and you're not going to leave them at $7 an hour. You want to hold on to them, so you move them up. My other thought is, you know, my average wage, and I really haven't looked at it hard.
Mr. McKinnon, if you could please, I guess, you know, we're trying to keep, you know, give everyone an opportunity. And so does the committee have any questions for Mr. McKinnon? Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I misunderstood at the beginning. The people that are working at the jail, those are prisoners, or they're just your employees that seem to that work in that location? And
no, they're prisoners that we set up 12 years ago with a joint venture to utilize some vacant space that they had, and it was a kind of a win-win situation that was created there.
So they're paid, what was the
$7.15, the minimum wage.
They're paid the minimum wage, and the other folks are paid for doing ferry
State ferry work. I think that's around $1. I don't know exactly. And then if you get the prisoners that are working right inside the prison doing sweeping the floors and that in the prison, they're 50 cents an hour or 2 bits. It's not really, the money is just more of a scorekeeping thing. I think in the prison, it's the idea is to keep them busy.
So the minimum wage in the prison is 50 cents, actually.
Probably. Maybe even 2 bits. I don't know. I have never been there to experience it. So.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. You mentioned you have these minimum wage, mostly young people working there, and they're making change, so they're handling money, and so integrity, honesty must come into question. I was taken with one of these forms that we got from whoever sent them in, saying if we increase the minimum wage, teenage shoplifting would decrease. Have you noticed that because people aren't making very much money, they're dishonest?
No. I've been actually, the people that make the less money are usually the most honest I've seen. I mean, it's just a gut feeling, but, you know, you never know who's going to steal from you. And, you know, and most often I'm most surprised, usually.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of people in New York City who had that surprise recently, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's... And there were a lot of economists that said he was doing a good job.
Senator Davis?
Yes. I really don't have a question for the speaker there. I do want to make a comment, though. I know what you're saying, and I know you feel very sincere in what you're saying. It's probably true what you're saying, but there's more than one side of the issue. Everybody that's working at minimum wages are not teenagers. It's not people that's working at minimum wages and they eventually, very soon, move up to the next level. There are many people at minimum wage that work in it for years, and there are people with families. There are people that have children. So it's not just teenagers that are in minimum wages.
Well, no. In fact, I've only got a few teenagers. A lot of my people...
Take all that into consideration.
Oh, yeah. But...
I had no question. I just wanted to make a statement.
Mr. McKinnon, thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate that. And we will now move to the off-site. We have people in Anchorage, Kenai, Fairbanks, and Juneau. If we could begin with Anchorage, LIO, and I believe it's John Fabiano representing Red Robin. Are you present? Is John Fabiano from Anchorage, LIO?
Hello,
yes, is this Mr. Fabiano?
All right, thank you. My name is John Fabiano. I represent the Red Robin here in Anchorage. We employ approximately 200 individuals. We are opposed to this current minimum wage increase, mainly because two reasons. It obviously significantly impact our current operations negatively, and also that this increase would predominantly provide for a wage increase to our employees that are already earning documented $15 to $25 an hour in tips alone. So we feel that this obviously increase is not geared towards who needs it the most. First of all, negative impact on our current operations. You know, we all talked about the last 3 years we've seen significant increases in, you know, all the utilities, commodities, food, gas, beverage, paper goods. Everything has gone up. We have items that have gone up 100%, specific things, but in generally across the board it's 30 to 50% on all the consumables, cost of goods, everything that comes into the restaurants. We've seen a huge spike. Fuel surcharges are basically the norm now, as opposed to 2 years ago, they were exception. Our vendors are quick to, you know, impose these surcharges and very slow to remove them. We're still, you know, even now, still seeing fuel surcharges and gas has come down quite a bit. You know, we're sharing the concerns that all these Alaska households are having with all these utilities because we're seeing the same increases, heavy increases on, you know, gas, electric, water, sewer, trash. So there's putting quite a strain on every household, you know, when you look at the bill, but also, you know, operations, it's squeezing everything. You know, also we're also operating in arguably one of the worst economic environments we've ever seen since the Great Depression. Every time you turn on your TV and radio, you can't help but notice that some giant corporation is laying off 7,000 people or, you know, fighting to stay alive, restructuring. So it's one of these things that's, you know, everybody's really hurting and that sort of thing. So, you know, the economy is in the near future is looking fairly bleak, so it's it seems to be getting any better. And this increase, we're talking a pretty substantial increase to what we're, you know, the minimum wage, you know, 22% across the board will have a pretty catastrophic effect on all the restaurant operators. And then the second point was, you know, this predominantly would provide for increases in wages to our employees that are already earning these documented $15 to $25 an hour. And this is based on what our employees, our tipped employees, who are minimum wage earners, predominantly our minimum wage earners, are telling us based on their declared tips. You know, that essentially that, you know, we're giving a raise to these highest paid employees and would force us to reevaluate what we're paying our non-tipped employees, so such as a cook, because of the squeeze that we'd be feeling from the increase on the minimum wage. So we would be less apt to hire somebody who are actually already earning higher than this $8.75. So starting wage for them that would be non-tipped would be lower, and we would also be less. We wouldn't be able to give them merit increases as frequently. So we feel that it's obviously disproportionate on that, and then also it's going to create a greater disparity in these wages earned per hour inside the restaurants between tipped employees and non-tipped employees, and it would really only benefit in our in our current operations the individuals that probably need it the least, who are already making those anywhere from 15 to 25, and that's sometimes it's even higher, but that's what our employees are telling us. So in a closing note, I wanted to point out that we would be supportive of a minimum wage increase, provided that there was some sort of dispensation given to an equitable distribution of wages among all employees. And this is actually something that's already provided for under federal law that has been adopted by 43 other states in a form of a tip credit legislation. I wanted to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Fabiano. Are there any questions of the committee, Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fabiano, can you tell me how many of your employees are actually at minimum wage? You say you have 200 in multiple stores, I guess. Is that?
Yes, we have. It varies, but generally on average, we have 200 employees. It's really every one of our servers are going to be at minimum wage. So, it runs. We're probably out of that 200, we probably have at least 80 to 90 servers, maybe 100, as much as 100. 40 to 50%. It depends on the what time of year. Summer will obviously have more. So every one of those individuals are at minimum wage, and so they are directly tipped. So we're being forced, obviously, because it's the state minimum wage, that to pay them that, and they're the ones that are telling us that, based on what's declared, that's what they're telling us, that they're making $15 to $25 an hour for every hour they've worked in that restaurant, So a lot of times the servers are making a lot more than all the managers as well.
If I may.
Salaried managers.
And are they all full-time employees?
A lot of them have, two jobs. So they work, they might work, serve in one restaurant and then serve in another restaurant. But, it just depends on their schedules. But most of the time servers would be considered part-time, between 20 and 25 hours, because a lot of them are full-time students, college students, or whatever. So.
And I take it from what you tell me that they're obviously not sharing the tips. And do you that's generally not the norm with the restaurants I'm familiar with. Generally, tip sharing is a thing that's done because the server realizes that it's the caliber of the food that the customer is eating, as well as their service, that causes the tip. And maybe it's because of the low wage that they're receiving that they feel that they're just getting balanced off here.
Well, the 15 to 20 an hour is net of that tip out that you're talking about, that you're referring to. That's what they're declaring, which they're netting off that tip out that they'll tip to the support staff, which will be the bussers, the hosts, the expos, the mixologists, the bartenders. That number is net of what they've tipped out to all those other individuals.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Fabiano? Seeing none, thank you. If we could now move to the Kenai LIO, and I believe that there is a Crystal Schoenrock from Nikiski.
It's Crystal Schoenrock, and I am also a member of the NFIB, and I'm also secretary of the Kenai Peninsula Char. I own the Forlands Bar in Nikiski, and I have a very small business. I have 3 employees and myself. I just fill in when I have to. But it will be a real strain on me to have to do the minimum wage, raise the minimum wage, because I have already lost business. And people, the liquor industry keeps raising us. And like you said, the delivery people raise us. And so we got to pay all these charges. And so the customers basically are kind of like, they don't want to pay the price, so they're more or less buying their stuff and going home. They're not coming out. And those 5 Nobel Prize winners that signed that paper, they weren't in my business, so they didn't know. But I feel that half of my workforce is just part-time, And I've got one full-time bartender, and besides myself, if I normally have to be there, but it would be a bit bad for me. I can't see where, I understand it's hard for them to make a living at the price, and but it would be hard on me to try to pay them. I'm barely skimming by right now.
Yes, Senator Thomas, you have a question for Crystal?
Yes. What kind of impact did the closing of the Agrium plant have on your particular business?
It didn't have that much. I never had very many people from the plant stop by, but the other plants do, but a lot of them just, they never came over.
I would have thought that 150 to 300 jobs of $75,000 a year in that area would have had a huge impact on almost every business in the area.
Well, I meant as far as customer-wise is what I'm speaking of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that it did have a bad on our business, too, had a big impact. But as customer-wise, we didn't have them come in.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll move now to the Fairbanks office and Bill Bobel.
Yes, thanks a lot, Mr. Chairman, Pastor Man. I have the Pump House Restaurant.
Yep.
And I'm a year-round employer. I run about 45 people in the winter and about 100 people in the summer. I'm not adamantly opposed to the basic concept of a minimum wage rate, but there is some really faulty arguments in your reasoning. There's basically two major flaws when I read this bill. 7.4% of the workforce earns $8.75 an hour. Those are people that are working on the minimum wage, and the majority of those people are tip people. So that really skews what the net effect is here, because nobody in the state, in Fairbanks anyway, offers a minimum wage job for a non-tipped position, because you can't find anybody to fulfill it. The basic entry wage for the fast food business now is $10 an hour. McDonald's advertises, "Get me a job, I'll pay you $10 an hour." So the minimum wage doesn't really actually apply. So that's problem number one. And then number two with that argument is the businesses with that have the most minimum wage employee. Labor, the cost of labor is their one single most biggest expense. This is not a manufacturing where labor is a minuscule because you're running an assembly line. So that argument goes away. So if you would take a look at that, you have a report there that says what the demographics are of that minimum wage. I think you will find those are positions with restaurants, hotels, service industries where tips is a majority of that. So then, so people really don't work for minimum wage in Alaska and anywhere else, for that matter, except in the deep south. I just came from Hawaii. A minimum wage there for a McDonald's employee was $12.50, and they got a big sign hanging outside the door. But what concerns me most is the CPI index. The feds do not use the CPI index, so I question, why should we? I don't know if anybody's been reading the paper, but we are in a depression here. And so the people that are most affected are really the small businessmen. So whatever cost this minimum wage is going to increase is going to be passed on to the customers. And right now, my business is down about 25%. That is a huge amount of sales, and is strictly due to the economy. So if I have to pay more money for a minimum wage, then that price has to be added to the price that I charge my customers. And right now, the customers are having a difficult time affording the prices that I already have had to raise because of all the other increases that I have to face. Now, the only way to offset this, as has already been mentioned, is a tip credit. You'd say that there's a majority of states that have higher minimum wage than Alaska does. And that's true. But the majority of those states also allow tip credits for the employees. My employees are a little higher tip. They average from $20 an hour in the winter to $40 an hour in the summer. So that makes $28 an hour and $48 an hour that these people are making for pay. So these, and the problem I have is I can't find managers or good line cooks where I pay $14 an hour because they'd rather be a server and make all the tips. So there's some huge problems with the thinking here, and most of it is a labor orient, because it's not really true. Mr. Thomas, you're, and I've heard this before when I've lobbied the floor down in Juneau, you worry about the foreign workers coming in. The reason the foreign workers are here in the first place is because there isn't enough labor that's willing to work at a wage that a small business can afford, $10, $12 dollars an hour. So the J-1s are coming in because they're filling a need, they're filling a gap. And by law, we cannot pay a J-1 less than the going wage for the same kind of work. So my lowest wage for a J-1 is $9 an hour already, and they don't stay there very long. As soon as they've learned to trade, they go up in relation. So that argument does not wash.
All right, thank you, Mr. Babel. Again, we're trying to keep it to 3 minutes. And
sure.
But anyway, Senator Thomas does have a question of you, so please stick around.
Thank you.
The question would be, and I disagree with you on the reason for the J-1 workers, particularly the way they're couched as cultural exchange. I don't see any students among the group, and I also don't see much of a integration into the community at all. Matter of fact, they live all in the same place and pretty much travel in their own group, and same thing in the restaurants. And I not noticed many at your particular establishment, but I know hundreds of kids in Fairbanks when school is out, and that's the justification that was always given to me, is that it does not match up with the school season, either the college season, when graduation is usually the first or second weekend in May, and usually the tourism season is considered the beginning or early part of May through mid-September, and school starts back late August, early September, so very close, and I'm sure the ramp up isn't a line that goes straight up at the beginning and the end and straight down at the end of the season. I know that's got to be some kind of a bell curve shape. So I guess I would disagree with your theory as well as you disagree with mine.
Okay.
And any other questions from the committee? Mr. Babel, thank you very much. And as a Nanook fan, I want to state thanks for your support for the Nanooks Saturday after the game, but thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pastorman.
All right, and if we could now move to the Juneau LIO, Mr. Gabe Aves, is he present?
Yeah, this is Gabe Aves. Can you hear me?
Yes, would you state your name and affiliation for the record, please?
Yeah, my name is Gabriel Aves. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, and I'm actually in Anchorage. ACPIRG, the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, has been around for, we're celebrating our 35th year this year, doing research and advocacy for various issues across the state of Alaska. We have members in all four corners of the state. We've worked on various worker issues in the past, campaign disclosure, voting rights, the environment, renewable energy, healthcare. And I'm calling to support the bill on behalf of ACPIRG for most of the reasons that the sponsor stated earlier in his testimony, but specifically having to do with the provision for adjustments for inflation. One thing, I'll keep my comments brief, but one thing that nobody has really pointed out here is that not only in Alaska, but across the nation, our minimum wage standards have been woefully inadequate for years. And in fact, if you look at statistics from economists on both sides of the political spectrum, you'll find that studies show that people who are trying to earn a living today actually have less purchasing power than our fathers did a generation ago in the 60s or 70s. So, you know, a 30-year-old head of household today, whether it's a man or woman, actually has less purchasing power today than their parents probably would have 30 years ago. So that's just the first thing. And to coincide with that, one thing that that hasn't been mentioned today is the fact that along with the exorbitant increases in the cost of living and a worker's purchasing power being lowered, workers' productivity has increased over the past 20 years by, you know, some estimates say 50% and some say 70%. And, of course, part of that is technology and part of that is workers being more efficient. So what you have are companies, especially large companies, who have employed people for 20 or 30 years and have dragged their feet on things like the minimum wage, while their workers are actually producing more for them today than they ever were before, but they're getting paid less in terms of real dollars when you talk about that. So I'd urge the committee to not just look at numbers and raw data and dollar signs, because it's not all that counts. So I just wanted to point out a couple quick things, and I'll be brief. But I wanted to read a passage from The Wealth of Nations, which was written by Adam Smith and published in 1776, and it says that a man must always live by his work, and his wages must at least be sufficient to maintain him. They must even upon most occasions be somewhat more, otherwise it would be impossible for him to bring up a family, and the rates of such workmen could not last beyond the first generation. He continues to say, it seems certain that in order to bring up a family, the labor of the husband and wife together must, even in the lowest species of common labor, be able to earn something more than what is precisely necessary for their own maintenance. Now, anybody who knows anything about economics knows that Adam Smith, his work is the fountainhead for free market economies all over the world. His approach to economics was hands-off. The government shouldn't be involved, but even he recognized 200 years ago that people have to be able to earn not only what is absolutely minimally required for them to earn a living, but somewhat more in order for them to carry on and for our own survival. So I just thought that was a poignant passage from a pretty powerful piece of economic work.
Thank you very much, Mr.
I've heard all the arguments today for and against this legislation, and I studied economics in college, and I've never heard of an
thank you, Mr. Avez. Would you please,
when the minimum wage goes up and low wage earners earn more, that employees making more money will then negotiate for raises? I've never heard that as an economic principle. I don't know where that came from, but I've worked for small businesses before.
Mr. Avez.
And
hello. can you hear me, Mr. Any questions for Mr. Avez?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bundy.
Cautiously. Answer question. Mr. Vez, you said the minimum wage is woefully inadequate. We had earlier discussion that even if you have this increase, it would be marginal to live in Alaska. What would you recommend as an adequate minimum wage?
Well, I don't have a specific number, Senator, through the chair. I don't have a specific number, and we haven't done any studies specifically on the cost of living or the minimum wage in Alaska recently. Right. But it is eye-opening that some of the numbers, both in Alaska and across the nation, you know, allow workers to earn less money today than they would have working for minimum wage in the 1960s. So that's where the argument comes from, but I don't have a number in mind.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Avez. Any other questions?
I just make the observation. It's hard to say something's inadequate when you don't know what adequate is. But Okay. It's kind of like beauty. I guess I know it when I see it.
All right. We'll now stick with Juneau, since apparently Mr. Avez was from Anchorage. And is there a Terry Wanzer, possibly from Ketchikan, participating through the Juneau LIL?
Yes, this is Terry Wanzer. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
I will. My name is Terry Wanzer. I live at 435 Hillcrest, Ketchikan, Alaska. And my affiliation is that my partner and I own the Best Western Landing Hotel and Restaurant. We've been in business since 1979, 30 years. We are taking the position. Along with that, I am also a board member of the Alaskan Hotel and Lodging Association, and I got permission to speak on behalf of them in that position as well. We take the position against SB1 in its present draft form, and especially with some of the previous speakers, that the cost of living would also make a very negative impact if this bill was passed. The second point, and I will keep this to 3 minutes, is the fact that we employ probably 70 to 100 employees, depending on the season, like previous speakers. And no one in any of our departments other than serving positions make the minimum wage. Our front desk makes from $10 to $16 an hour. Housekeeping makes $9 to $11 an hour. Dishwashers, they make $9 to $11 an hour. And cooks, like previous speakers, make $14 to $16 an hour. The fact is, like has been said before, you cannot find employees that will work for less than $10 to $12 an hour. The 42 states that already have tip credits, we agree with that. That should be implemented into some form. But this state, for some reason, has been resistant to do that. It has been previously stated that high school students or college or entry-level people. That is true. But a lot of our staff here in the serving position that do make minimum wage have been with us 17 or longer years. You're not increasing the buying power by raising the minimum wage. You cannot pass on these costs to the public. Some industries do. For example, when you receive freight, they put on a fuel surcharge. We can't increase the cost of a hamburger. It just will not happen. You can't concurrently raise the cost of your menu because you won't have any customers. I think, and it's been stated before, that these should be merit increases built into the American way of hard work equals higher pay. Us as business owners, it's risk is what we take to invest. If you take the element of creating investors to take the risk, then you don't have any jobs. We're the ones that create the jobs so that people will come and work for us. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much for listening to us.
Thank you, Mr. Wanzer. Any questions of Senator Bundy?
Just a clarification. I thought I heard you say you don't have any minimum wage employees, but then maybe it is you don't have any other than servers who are minimum.
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't quite understand.
Thank you, Mr. Wanzer. We would now move to Buster Martin here at the Juneau offsite. Is Buster Martin available?
Yeah, this is Buster Martin. I'm with the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. I'm in Anchorage. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Would you? We've got your name and affiliation, United Food Workers. Please provide your testimony.
Yeah, well, I just from my experience as a union representative, we represent the grocery workers throughout the state. And the fact of the matter is that we do have a lot of employees out there that have to start at 7:15 or $7.50 an hour, and that's what the contracts say. Retail entry-level wages have always been closely tied to the minimum wage. So the amount of phone calls that we get in a month from people that are just not making it, from, you know, that need help, that that can't afford to take care of their families is phenomenal, and especially in the last 5 years, with the economy the way it is. It would be, I think, you know, and I don't know that $7.15 an hour, you know, could anybody make it on that? I don't think so. I mean, they were talking about the numbers at the beginning of the of this discussion, and I don't think anybody can make it. I get phone calls from guys that are making $12 to $13 an hour that can't make it in places like Ketchikan, places like Juneau, where the cost of living is higher. So we are definitely supportive of this bill, and would like to see it passed with the inflation-proof language that goes with it. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Any questions from the committee? Yes, Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. I'm trying to get a grasp of what the actual impact would be for people that are in your union. What we're looking at is, you know, an increase of about $2,000 a year. It's less than $200 a month increase in wages for these people who are not making it, in your words now. Would that be enough for them to make it, or how much higher should the minimum wage be so that they could live a more comfortable life?
Well, I'm not an economist, obviously, and you know, the problem with the starting rates being, you know, able to be so low are that, you know, people can't afford to work for the 3 or 4 or 5 months that it takes for the employer to go ahead and grant an increase. And that's, you know, and that's the way it is in our contracts. Everything's based on hours. So the frustration is that they know that they're going to go to a higher rate and, you know, up to $18 an hour in some of these areas. However, they can't survive on what it takes, on what they make, you know, in the interim. So, like I said, we get phone calls, you know, people down in Ketchikan that are working at the contract rate of $11.65 down there an hour are working two jobs. A lot of them are. Definitely husband and spouse both work. So, it's, you know, the magic number, you know, $8.75 is a good start.
Any further questions for Mr. Martin?
I just observed, Mr. Chairman, I taught for 25 years, and of those 25 years, 23 of them, I worked two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure that it's just minimum wage that encourages you to want to.
All right, we'll get one more person in, and it's from Anchorage, Jens Nannesons. Is Jens available?
I am available.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Jens Nannestad, and I own the Southside Bistro as well as partner in City Diner. And I also oppose this bill. And most of the statements have already been made that I had scribbled on this piece of paper. However, I personally employ 100 employees, and out of the 100, 60 of them are working on the minimum wage, which none of them are working for just that. They are also tipped employees. And I think the statements have already been made that I was going to mention here, so I just want to second that and state that I do oppose the bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions for Jens?
Question Senator for Biden. You, Mr. Chairman. We've heard pretty consistently concerns about tip credits. I've heard those discussions before. And just a question, is the committee going to consider addressing the tip credit problem under the umbrella of this bill?
I think that may be something the bill sponsor would look to. If, with the briefness of the last person, I'd like to get one more person from Fairbanks in, so we get the. So is John Brown from Fairbanks, LIO? Is he still there?
Yes, he's here. One second. I'm sorry. To the chair, my name is John Brown. I'm from Fairbanks here, and I just wanted to commend the sponsor of the bill and hope that we move this forward. I recognize that there's definitely concerns in some businesses, and I think some legitimacy to them, but I just haven't seen a way to address, for instance, tipped employees that make sure that there isn't abuse. And so I understand that, you know, when we raise the minimum wage, I'm going to pay a little bit more when I go out to eat. But I think looking at our economy, it's just essential that wages keep up with inflation. And they haven't for 40 years. And I think it's part of the structural deficiency in our economy right now. A lot of people will tell you that, you know, we're just in a cycle. Well, I disagree. You know, wages have not kept up with inflation for 40 years. And I think it's well established that, and employers attested to it, that the minimum wage will raise the bar for everyone. And that's what we need to do here in America right now. I think we need to get back to where people that go to work every day, work hard, can make a living without having to fight and scratch and claw each other down into the gutter. And I'm hopeful that this bill will pass soon. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Any questions for Mr. Brown? Seeing none, that will end the public testimony. I want to thank everyone. I think we've learned something from everyone that provided testimony today. We will conclude the meeting today. We're going to hold the bill for today. We will begin, again, testimony at 1:30 next Thursday, February 12th. I want to again remind people that they may submit either emails or letters directly to me as the committee chair of Labor and Commerce, or to any committee member on this committee, or to their legislators, and ask them to forward it to us, and that will become part of the permanent record. Again, thank everyone. The meeting is adjourned. It is approximately 3 p.m.